Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis.
And I'm Pastor Margaret Michael.
Thanks for tuning in. And today we're joined by Nate Riddle. Nate, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And Nate's been on before, and he's the director of Valley Open Doors here. And so we're here for him to share about that.
Yeah, I think it's great to have you here today, Nate. This is a ministry that really doesn't stop, right? Yeah. It is always before us. Scripture talks about taking care of those that don't have, and if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it unto me, Jesus said, right? Yeah. And so that's how you have given your life. Right now, it's giving your life. But before we get to that, I mean, you have a life outside too, right? Yeah. Of Open Doors. So
Sometimes.
So could you just give us, before we get into what you do for work, give us an update, like just for those that have not heard you on here before, or maybe for those that have forgotten, but just tell us a little bit about where you're from and maybe your family, like what is, as far as your family today, like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I am a native of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. I grew up most of my life in Keeseltown, so I am a Valley boy.
Yes, you are.
And I, despite maybe 5 or so years, have lived here all my life. I went to college in Virginia Beach and did a little bit of a layover, as I call it, after graduation. It's where I met my wife. We had our first child there and said, well, let's go back to somewhere that's a little slower pace. So we found ourselves back in the Valley, but now in Stanton. So for the past 4 years now, I've lived in Stanton. And so I am married to a wonderful lady named Victoria. And then I also have 2 children.
Very good.
6-year-old. Oh, my goodness. It's hard to believe. And a 3-year-old little girl who keeps me on my toes.
Yes.
And so it's great to see them just blossom and be supported by such an intimate community that we have here in the Valley, no matter where you're at. And I see that every day in my work, but also my personal life. I have been brought up in the faith tradition, worship at a Brethren church locally. Mm-hmm. And so service has always played such a substantial role in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And making sure that what we have is not just ours, but shared.
That's right.
And taking care of the least of these, started off with. That's who I am. And I try to keep myself busy and engaged outside of Open Doors as well.
Right.
Podcasts are one of those things.
And so, and I believe that you've spent a few volunteer hours at Hope Distributed as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And our congregation, I think, does a monthly service of that mission.
So thank you.
Awesome. Yep.
From Hope Distributed.
Yeah, thank you.
That's great. So I think that sometimes we go, well, this is the director, and we don't really get the person and the heart for the community and for faith and all of the layers that really matter when it comes to this type of service.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, thank you for just giving us a little peek inside of that. And then to know that at the end of the day, after you've done this work, you drive to Stanton and you have young children waiting for
you.
And wife. So thank you for sharing that. We have, you opened the shelter. How long has that been now since we opened up that new shelter?
Yeah, our new facility is coming up on a year in December. We moved in the week of Christmas. And so it has been ongoing. And in the day that we moved from our temporary facility to the new structure in the shelter program, we saw an immediate 100% occupancy in the men's area, and then in the women's within a week, we doubled our capacity in both of those areas, and it was immediately filled, which speaks to the need that remains and has presented itself.
Yeah. And I said shelter, but it's so much more than a shelter, right?
Yeah.
So my apologies. So tell us, like, yes, there is a shelter, but wait, there's more, right?
Yeah, we say Open Doors is really a human service agency that has a staple program, which is the low barrier shelter. So, that's the biggest thing we're known for. That's what we've done consistently throughout our entire 17 years, 18 years this November, 2025. And so we also, though, provide holistic services to individuals that are with us in the program, from peer support to case management to healthcare. And then we also have a daytime drop-in center that's open to the unhoused and housed, and that provides free laundry and Wi-Fi and showers.
You have showers too. Yes. I just learned about that like 2 weeks ago. I'm like, what? I should have known that. But anyway.
Those things are free to the public. You know, the shelter is still overnight only, and that's because we want the campus, the facility, to work for the general community during the day. And so folks are coming as far as Berkton and the Elkton area to take showers or to do their laundry. Folks that are living in their car are taking advantage of those services. We also provide something we broadly refer to as resource navigation, and that's our goal, to be a one- or two-door service to broader resources. So if you need utilities assistance, we don't have someone on site, but we can be the one call or the one door away from the next direct connection. That's more popular over the phone. Folks call us for that throughout the week, but you can also come to that service in person. And some of the partners we have on site are able to provide direct services to where we are the one door. We can say, hey, come back, and it's in this office today or on Wednesday, for example. Yes. So our goal is to reach more than the unhoused.
Yeah.
And that's our passion. But
it's so much more than a bed. It is about finding a way forward and helping these folks with the resources they need to live their best and to regain their life.
Right.
How many services are in-house, drop-in services?
Yep. So we have four anchor partners, meaning they have an office assigned to them all week. They provide a variety of walk-in or appointment-based services. And then we have another three, so that would bring us up to a total of seven. But those other three are rotational, so they're there once a week for at least 4 hours. And those are mostly satellite offices, so it's another organization that provides it elsewhere but brings it to that part of town through our center. Yeah. And that's things like healthcare through the Sentara Mobile Unit or Stonehaven, which also has connections here and provides case management for victims of sexual exploitation and human trafficking, a very real need. And sometimes for housing folks that they're working with.
They just got someone in housing this week.
Yeah.
Got them their own apartment, a safe place to sleep. We work closely with Stonehaven.
Yes.
It's been really exciting to see them find those places and be able to connect in the community through places like Open Doors.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
It's great when ministries are able to partner with other ministries, and instead of providing the same things, if you provide different things and connect the people that need multiple services. Like you said, you have four in-house services and three that are more hybrid.
Yeah, that's our goal, right, is to meet the needs of the individual, which are different for each person, but we want to be holistic. Mm-hmm. We recognize that we have our expertise and our specialties, but there's also a need for other organizations, and so we want to do that with. We're not tugging and pulling for territory, but we are very intentional when we're looking at a case or a need to make sure that resources are utilized the best.
Right.
We know that, for example, we'll go back to Stonehaven, has their mission, and they're going to be able to run and make most progress with their client versus us learning the whole new landscape.
Right.
So we have a very niche population we work with, and so do our partners, and so we want to build off that.
Yeah, and help them find jobs or whatever it is that they're in need of to help them find housing if they're able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Internally, we say guest. Yes. We want them to feel welcomed, but we also want it to be the expectation that it's a temporary place. It's not a long-term solution. Our goal is for a long-term transition to where they can be self-sufficient and healthy and successful.
Yeah, it is so much more than a shelter, and I think that's what we're hearing today. And I hope that's really good news for people listening, that they're going, I did not realize. But this is the thing. Like, at one point, it was more of there was some medical, you know, support there. A nurse would be on site, and people brought food in, and that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But now it has grown into not just something that you are doing, but a partnership within our community. We're better together, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah. Now, I know that when you have the guests staying there, there's a need for food.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's been a journey of its own. But I was invited into a meeting downtown a few weeks ago, and you walked in the door. I was not surprised because it was a meeting to talk about feeding the homeless. But it was a group of churches that provide meals. So would you share with us just a little bit about that, what that looks like? I mean, there's been people that have provided meals downtown. I can remember helping at Blessed Sacrament. Our life groups would go in and support them in making meals. But share what that looks like now, and just maybe a little bit about where Open Doors is with it and then how the community is supporting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, the group that you're referring to is one that's convened by First Presbyterian, right? And it's really focused on mostly churches that are in that geographic area downtown, some non-faith-based organizations as well looped in there, but open to, to congregations that are also outside of downtown but have a ministry or a heart for ministry in this area. And you're right. I mean, there are breakfast and lunch and dinners that are provided by the faith community and those organizations all week.
Yes.
Within its rotating, right? It's in that congregation. But that group convenes those resources to coordinate, share about best practices, and to make sure that there's good coverage.
Yes.
And that there's a breakfast, lunch, and dinner when there's needed. And there are still some gaps, but there are a lot more filled in places than there are gaps. And so the dedication of the faith community, you know, we often have a picture of a struggling faith community nationwide, but, you know, every day, maybe I'm biased because I just said I'm from here and love this place so much, but we have such an active faith community still locally. Yeah. And I don't want that to be overshadowed when in our conversations. You know, Open Doors with this new project has seen significant growth. We've done that, of course, internally with our programming, but also through those partnerships we discussed. Over the 17 years, we've been able to position the majority of our programming to be complemented by volunteers and community, but not reliant. And what I mean by that is if a volunteer calls out, the programming continues. But boy, there's so much more at it when the volunteer's there.
That's right.
So there's still a big need and big appreciation for it. But we can ensure there's continuity of services. And as we've grown into this larger mission, as the mission and need has gotten larger, that's been a requirement that we've had to have to move towards. But our food services program, moving into this new facility, was still positioned in a way where it was more reliant on community than staff. We did introduce our first part-time kitchen manager and then had the design based on engagement from students, from faith communities, from businesses. And our goal was to provide continued meal service 7 days a week for dinner. And we saw in the first 3 or 4 months of operations that wasn't going to be sustainable. So we reduced to 3 nights. For another month to see if we were able to take the capacity and the scale that we had to make that sustainable, and it wasn't. So we had to make the really hard decision to pause food services, full meal service, I should say, in the interim. We didn't sit on our hands. We established a work group with external partners from industry, from the faith community, from even volunteer engagement and community service organizations to say, hey, Open Doors wants to hear from your different perspectives. I was very clear, and this is hard for me, right, not to talk, but when I came in, I said, I'm going to try to zip my mouth and be the facilitator, answer the Open Doors questions you have, but wanted them to bring their expertise and to really have the big voice of what could restored service look like. And ultimately, you know, through our research of other programs that are up and down 81 throughout the region, looking at what our local capacity is and what did and did not go well in the first iteration, because the faith community did support us to some level, right? It still does, but in that meal service, I don't want to, again, say that the faith community wasn't with us. It certainly was. It was determined that, at least in the foreseeable future, we cannot restore full meal service.
Yes.
One of the things that before Open Doors had their building before Red Front. Open Doors was a shelter in a church, correct? And that church, man, people would come in that week and they would just cook amazing meals.
It was a rotation, right?
They rotated throughout the community. And We, just because of location and things that happen here at the church, we never were a shelter, but we cooked meals here and took them in, and we loved that. But I get the feeling that it's a little different for folks to go into a new kitchen. Mm-hmm. There's some unknowns with that. Mm-hmm. And so that volunteer base that we had that was really good,
right?
It didn't flow over into...
Translate.
Yeah. That's a good word. Into the new setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our listeners, like, having that piece of understanding of, man, it is different.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful kitchen.
Yes.
I got to cook in that kitchen. And so it is a different setting now. And so for the foreseeable future, there's some other things in place. Folks are going to still be able to eat. You all have made some, I think you're having more of continental, mm-hmm. would be the meals, breakfast and dinner, some things that they can heat up there. But then there's the churches. And
yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I always, when we have someone in that's doing this work, I want to ask, how can the community get involved if a church is listening,
yeah.
and they go, you know what, we could do this, like, what are the options, and who are the churches that are doing this, so that they can maybe reach out, like, mm-hmm. I'm hoping that our life groups can kind of jump in and hold the arms up, you know, be
yeah.
some errands for these teams that are doing it on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, in that downtown group that you're sharing about, some of those employ a similar model to when we were rotational. Yes, it's in their church, but then they pool in other congregations to staff it at different times.
Mm.
So there may be opportunities for congregations to wrap their arms around food service in the community
yeah.
where folks are, right? It's focused on the downtown community, because that's where most of the unhoused or the lower income individuals are going for resources. You know, but there's still opportunities and for the faith community to engage with Open Doors. One of the things, and it's very cliche, is, right, we're talking about feeding stomachs,
mm-hmm.
right? And we're
right.
still doing that through the model that you discussed. We kind of say it's nutritional support.
Yes.
So not a full meal, but we are providing
mm-hmm.
food, but feeding the soul and the spirit,
mm-hmm.
right? So socialization, whether that's faith-based or not, is huge
yes.
for the individual.
Yes.
And so that's an area where I think the faith community can continue to really engage. We have
yeah.
other opportunities as well.
Yes.
But that's one that I think, you know, for me as someone of faith would really help me realize, okay, maybe not as tangible as food, but I am still playing a big part in someone's journey.
To be able to sit down across the table and look someone in the eyes and ask them what their name is, there's no value that you can place on that.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, with the homeless community, people don't want to look people in the eyes. They're not used to having people look them in the eye. And I can just remember, and I might have shared this story on here before, but there was one lady when we were at Red Front serving meals, and she so impressed me. She was not there for the long haul. She knew she was a guest, and she worked at Hardee's. And she walks up to get her plate, and I called her by name because I remembered her from the time before. And it was so impactful to her, but it impacted me so deep that God used me that day just to remember her name.
Yeah.
And the only reason as a 19, 20, 21 year old that I wasn't on the streets is because I couch surfed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the only reason I wasn't homeless. Like, God did protect me in those crazy times. So I understand what it is not to have a place to lay your head. And maybe that's why I feel so strongly about. I can just remember when someone invited me to their table for a meal. And we have that opportunity as believers. And in Jeremiah 29, we love Jeremiah 29:11, that God has a plan for us and a hope. But if we back up, and he's writing to those exiled in Babylon, his children, the people of God are in Babylon, and God sends a message through Jeremiah, and he said, be fruitful and multiply, plant gardens. And at the end of that whole command to his people, he said, and be about the welfare of your community, because your welfare depends on it.
Mm.
And that's a different, it's not the NIV translation, but that's just a translation that really helps me understand what it means. Because we have a responsibility. And so it's something that I take really serious.
Yeah.
And this is a great opportunity. Like, this is the place that we can come together. It's bigger than all of us, but together we can do it. So if there's a church or an individual, like, what would you say to them? How can they get connected to this? Mm. All the different ways. You all have volunteer opportunities at the shelter, and as well as there's volunteers, there's opportunities to volunteer in the community. So would you want to maybe just give some clarity?
Yeah, absolutely. For us, I mean, you can find our opportunities online on our website at valleyopendoors.org. Getting plugged into the congregations, right? There is a public calendar, and we have it in front of us here for the viewers at home, so we're not going off of memory. But, you know, there are other churches that you can reach out to get plugged into their ministries. Folks like First Presbyterian or Blessed Sacrament. Families, as you said, Pastor Margaret, mm-hmm. it's not just organizations, but getting plugged in to the congregations already doing the work. Many hands make for light work.
Yeah. And, you know, through Salvation Army, the table, that's a great one with the Stuhlheimers. Like, yeah, they're all great.
What's a contact that they could, like a phone number? Is there a certain phone number, like somebody that heads this up?
Scott Thayer at First Pres would be
okay. So reach out to First Presbyterian and ask for Scott.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a good way because he is the one that kind of oversees all of this.
Yeah.
So do you have a story just of hope today? Someone that's been impacted by...
Yeah. Just generically, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, let me highlight our drop-in center and the impact there. We thank so much of the shelter. Yeah. And I think last time I shared a story of Stephen, which I could use his name. And that's someone that successfully came through our shelter program and is now housed still to today that I'm aware,
that's
and which is amazing. It's been more than a year or two now then. But we had an individual present to our drop-in center. A friend had come across him in his travels and didn't realize he was back in the area and stopped and had conversation with him and learned that he was experiencing homelessness. And knowing of our center, brought him to us, hoping to enroll him in the shelter program. And again, speaking to the need, then and we currently do have a wait list. Right, for the shelter. And so we were able to add the individual to the wait list, but as he is walking out, the receptionist overheard him say to his friend, well, now the next stop is the hospital to get my prescriptions replaced. And we were able to say, oh, wait a minute. The clinic's here today. Do you want to just see someone here?
Wow.
And within 30 minutes, he went into the clinic, had an assessment done by a provider. His prescription was sent over to the pharmacy, and that was, you know, set up there for him to pick it up. And so he eventually did enroll into the shelter program and then, of course, had even better access to those resources. But in that moment, you know, we added him to the wait list, but we were able to meet the immediate need of healthcare and a prescription at a much lower – I mean, it's free.
Right.
Our partner at the Suitcase Clinic provides this service for free. So saved him time, saved our community resources, right? We don't want to talk about it in a macro scale that takes away the person, but it's also a big service for the community and for our local medical providers. So we were able to send him off healthier, right, and to meet that immediate need that he came in with.
That is amazing. Recently, and I'm sure that you run into this, recently there was someone who came here looking for shelter. They were living in their car. And I'm like, Open Doors. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I have a dog. And these are animals that are emotionally supporting these individuals. And I've thought, wow, wouldn't it be something if there was someone, I don't know what you can do. Because you don't want to take this pet that is really, if I am a woman sleeping in a car, that is
protection.
That's their protection. That's the safety that she can actually lay her head down and go to sleep. Yeah. I mean, I just don't know if we get the what that's like. Yeah. I mean, we don't, right? And so I'm just putting it out there. I'm just putting it out. Man, what it would be like to have a place where the animal could be provided for? For what? I mean, I know it's just a real issue.
Yeah.
Because if they're not a
service animal,
if they're not a service animal, then they're not coming in the shelter, correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, for folks that aren't familiar with our model completely, we have a congregant setting. So the 80 are staying in much more dignified than when we rotate it and it was on the floor, right. But it is an open congregant setting. We do have some private rooms for medical reasons, you know, not acute issues, but respite care, post-op recovery, mm-hmm. quarantine, things like that. But that makes the issue of pets a little complicated for us. So absolutely service animals. We do have options locally, but it's separation, right? Yeah. So the animal wouldn't be directly with the owner at those times. And so that obviously makes the option, while it's present, obviously no one wants to take advantage of that because, as you stated, there's a reason why people have animals, whether it's the protection or just the emotional connection. Yes. Yeah. Right. I have two dogs. I don't know if you all have pets. Yeah. So how would you want to, you know, abandon your pet in crisis when you really need the emotional connection even more? So we are fully empathetic of that. And we certainly have evaluated models. You see it much more out west where homelessness is even a larger issue, where there is continued unity between the animal and the person. Are we at the point where a community could address that completely in that way here? No. Yeah. That would obviously require somewhat of some pet expertise to come in with us.
Yes.
Not that we aren't, chatting about those things, but that would be another area where Open Doors couldn't address it alone. It's interesting because we've seen ebbs and flows. Sometimes there are a lot of individuals experiencing homelessness that we know about that also has an animal, and then it seems to wane. Mm-hmm. In the spring, typically, is when we see the increase. It's a very real need that's there at scale.
So, I'm not asking you to – consider that. It's just there is a difference between a service dog and an emotional support. The dog has to actually provide a service for the person to be a service dog. So, I think there's just a lot I had to learn around all of that.
Yeah.
But to know that there are some options in our community. So, there are so many caveats.
Yes.
To this work. So thank you for just how you continue to lean in and find the best way forward. I think if there's one thing that I would want to say is I've watched this program go from a church, based setting, a thermal shelter, and to today has grown. Yes, the churches would like to just everybody have a good home-cooked meal and that's, but right now, the services that you all have added, they're not that home-cooked meal. We might get to that. But what you are providing is help to find housing and a long-term, you're looking for, like you said with Stephen, hey, he's in housing. Mm-hmm. And, he's been in, this is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And so it is amazing what you are doing. And just thank you so much for continuing to lean in and help us help the community to understand. I think you're more than willing to go out and talk to other churches.
Absolutely.
So if you want to say something about that or organizations, you'll go and talk anywhere, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll go anywhere they give me a microphone or even just allow me to project my voice. I can talk until the cows come home. You can certainly reach out to us at our number 540-705-1908 or find our contact information online at valleyopendoors.org. And we'd love to meet with your group, whether it's a civic organization, a faith community, what have you. And no one's too young to get engaged in the mission. So we can come to schools as well. Mm-hmm. Schools do participate in our mission. And come take a tour of the facility. We're happy to set those things up as well. We have open houses typically once a quarter. They won't be resumed until 2026 now with the holiday season. But we're happy to show the facility as well and to see the great work that's being done. Yeah. We do this with community, right? One of the other misconceptions is that we're largely subsidized by government, whether that be local or state or federal. That's just not true.
Right.
Less than 25% of our budget comes from government resources. Yes. That's all local. Then after that, it's you, the listener, faith communities, and businesses that are really keeping us going.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Nate. And also, I'm sure you would appreciate the prayers for the ministry that you all do.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We have a great team behind me. I just get to come on things like this and look good in the community. But we have a team of 19 that make sure that the awesome things that we accomplish with our guests are available, and they're just as dedicated to the mission. Yes. And want to give them kudos as well for all that they do.
Yes. Yep. Well, thank you for joining us today on Hope Talks. Nate, it's been great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. We pray that as we've talked with Nate Riddle a little bit about his story and about Valley Open Doors and the ministry that they're doing in our community, that it truly has been a half hour of hope for your life. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.